Now playing in select cities.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Well, coming up, help for veterans who are having trouble navigating the VA or getting the benefits due them or problems with their discharge papers. We're going to take your phone calls in a moment on those topics. But first, one additional comment about yesterday's program. One of our guests, an organizer of tomorrow's Circus McGurkus on St. Petersburg's South Side, Lynn Carroll Henderson, wanted to add this about tomorrow's Circus McGurkus event.
This is Lynn Carroll from Circus McGurkus. As I reflected on the show yesterday, I realized that I did not say that the newly reinvented circus is making a giant attempt to be family-friendly. We're asking everyone, especially the nonprofits, to dramatize their message by having something at their tables for families and children and all kinds of folks to do. I'll hope you'll be able to add this tomorrow. Thanks again for a lovely visit.
Well, there you have a listener comment about yesterday's program. Circus McGurkus takes place tomorrow from 10 to 4 at Lakewood United Church of Christ on 54th Avenue South in St. Petersburg. Well, tomorrow is Veterans Day, and as we've been doing the last several years here on WMNF, we'll be hearing from two veterans advocates right now on the question of dealing with the Veterans Administration and dealing with other veterans issues. 2.7 million service members have been to the war zones of Iraq and Afghanistan since 2001, and over half of them have deployed more than once. At least 970,000 veterans have some degree of officially recognized disability as a result of the wars, and an unknown number live with physical and emotional scars that have not been given disability status. We're joined now by two local attorneys who specialize in veterans issues, and they can help you or a loved one if you're having difficulties with either your military records or the VA. David Corey is here and Rick Hurley is here. They join us once again. And Rick and David, welcome back to WMNF. Nice to see you again.
Thanks, Rob. It's great to be here. And yes, This is our fifth year on your program.
Is it the fifth year?
Fifth year in a row, and we're really appreciative of this opportunity.
Well, I wondered if you, I talked about a little bit about the cost of war there at the top. 2.7 million service members have been to the war zones in Iraq and Afghanistan since 2001, and at least 970,000 veterans have some degree of officially recognized disability as a result of the wars over there. What else would you like to add to that, those statistics?
Well, there's a lot that we could add, and I think that there needs to be a discussion. Rick and I had the opportunity back in September to talk to two of the co-directors of Brown University's Costs of War Project, and I'd ask our listeners, they can check out their website, which is costsofwar.org, but it provides a lot of good information that can help facilitate what should be a national discussion about the human costs, the social costs, the economic costs, political costs of war. And it's kind of a starting basis. Rick and I, on kind of a ground floor level, we represent disabled veterans. So we see veterans, we see the effect that it has on them coming back from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. We see the effects on their families. Service members, they come home with post-traumatic stress and also physical disabilities. But some other statistics, for the sake of statistics, is that it's been determined that about 20 to 22 veterans take their life by suicide every day.
Every day.
Every day. Wow. And I'm not saying that all those were from the Iraq and Afghanistan war, but one of our clients, her son took his life as a result of really untreated post-traumatic stress. And the VA does a lot of good things for people, but one area where there's some continuing weaknesses is that on the mental health side. And so it costs people their lives. So as far as statistics, about 6,900 U.S. troops have died in Iraq and Afghanistan since the war started in Iraq in 2003 and Afghanistan in 2001, but also about 7,000 contractors. When we're discussing what the cost of war and the effect of these wars, we have to look at the fact that these two wars have taken the idea of contracting out things to to a degree never before seen. We've had it in prior wars, you know, the Halliburton, the KBRs, Brown and Root, and all those, but we've taken it to a much further extent.
Are most of those private contractors former military?
Many of them.
Many of them are.
Yeah. So if they get injured in the course of their private contracting, do they have any benefits? VA related benefits.
Not VA related. Yeah. And I'd also add that a lot of those contractors, though, are what Americans call third country nationals. In other words, they might be
local
immigrants
Iraqis
to that area. Or they may be from. When I was in Saudi Arabia in 1992, I was surprised by the large number of Filipino citizens that were working there. But the point being that as far as the cost of war, there's been approximately 7,000 contractors that have died. Conservative estimate by the cost of war project is about 43,000 of our allied troops and police have died and over 75,000 have wounded. But beyond that, we need to look at the other fatalities. There have been at least 200,000 civilians that have been killed in those wars, and the total number of deaths, about 370,000. Americans tend to get fixated, well, we've lost 6,900 troops, as if that's some sort of bean counting improvement over Vietnam, that where we lost 58,000, or World War II, where we lost 400,000.
There's a reason for that, though.
Go ahead, Rick.
I mean, a lot of these veterans are coming home mangled. You know, it used to be when you went to Vietnam, you might have a MASH unit taking care of you, and you might not make it out of there.
The survival rates are better in modern days, right? So in Iraq and Afghanistan, because we have we can get the soldiers back more quickly from the battlefront, and we have better medical treatment, the survival rates are
better. I was talking to Dr. Yoho, who is from Tampa, and he was telling me that when they got injured in Iraq, Afghanistan, they send them get them on a plane, 747 type of plane, that they can do surgery, then send them up to Germany. And then within a day, they're over at Walter Reed. So, this, like you said, the survival rate is extensively better, and so these men and women are surviving.
But that doesn't mean
a cost.
There's
a cost to that.
Yeah.
Because now they come home and they don't have limbs, and we have to take care of them. They're in wheelchairs. I mean, and that's where David and I see so much. You know, we were talking about that one young veteran who committed suicide. It was Memorial Day 2016. He had been fighting for 4 years for his PTSD. VA kept denying him. He finally got his father's gun, went into his car, and texted a relative and said, why can't the VA take care of me? Why do I have to be one of 22 today? And he ended his life. The end of this month, we're actually going for a hearing to get him service-connected for his PTSD 2 years after his death. And he's just one example of many veterans who go through this.
What would happen if it's granted, even though he's been dead for 2 years?
He has a surviving child.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to obtain what would be the accrued benefits and also the survivor benefits. So, but it's you know, with the VA, we've talked about this in prior years. And later in the show, we like to talk about the VA claims and appeal system. They've passed legislation to reform it. Great bipartisan support, but there's some problems to it. But as far as the cost of war, as part of this discussion, I think that needs to happen is to look at the large number of deaths. Like I say, at least 200,000 civilians that have been killed in the fighting. There have been approximately 10 million people in the war zones that have become displaced or war refugees. And you may think, okay, why refugees? They have to go to other countries, but consider their life, lack of access to food, health care, housing, employment, clean water and sanitation, pretty much destroy the infrastructure of Iraq and Afghanistan, which wasn't that great in Afghanistan to begin with. But the educational system, the health care system in Iraq is in shambles. And those are the things that people, it's like they're hiding in plain sight. People don't think about it enough. Now, as far as
And I should say that some of those refugees come here, some go to Western Europe, where they go to Scandinavia and Germany and change the nature of those countries.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. But meanwhile, those that are still there are living in horrendous, precarious conditions over there. High unemployment, lack of good water, electricity, basic things. And then there's issues that you know, the economic issues, where the cost of war project has estimated that the United States federal government has spent or obligated $4.8 trillion. So that's almost five with 12 zeros after it. It's a lot of money, and consider what that could be spent on our domestic needs. But there's also the idea of that doesn't even consider local and state services. It doesn't consider all the money that people donate to all these thousands, literally thousands of veteran charities, which are all part of it. It doesn't discuss local expenditures for Homeland Security. And as you mentioned earlier, injuries to private contractors. I'm concerned that they're not getting the, you know, the kind of care. The VA system, for all its flaws, is very generous in many respects.
We're talking with David Corey and Rick Hurley. They're two local attorneys that work to help veterans get their benefits. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Our email address, dj@wmnf.org. And David, I don't want to interrupt the cost of war chain of thought that you're on, but also I want to ask you, is the VA acting more quickly when somebody applies for benefits, because we've heard this controversy over the past two or three years, is the VA doing a better job right now? Rick, you want to take that?
The answer, quite bluntly, is no. Currently, if you sit down with what we call decision review officer, which is the first appeal stage when a claim is denied, they're telling me they're still working on 2013, 2014 cases. Every once in a while, someone will slip through there and I'll get a 15 or 16 case. But by and large, it's 2013, 2014. And one of the things that I deal with daily is numerous phone calls from clients who ask me, have you heard anything? What's next? And we might be 3 or 4 months into the appeal process. And I have to sit there and explain to this veteran. And it's hard. And you know, I understand why they get so frustrated and give up. And my personal philosophy is that's what the VA wants. They want to frustrate these veterans, and they will give up. And you know, if a veteran can find a good support group, good legal team, to keep them in the game, just keep moving the ball forward.
I thought the politicians were taking care of this.
Sounds real good. Sounds real good, Rob.
Can I address that? Earlier this year, Congress passed, and then in August, President Trump signed a bill called the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017. It's an issue that's been kicked around for the last couple of years, and it sounds good. It was passed with hardly any opposition, both the House and the Senate, and then President Trump signed it in August. And what it does is essentially revamp the processes. But the way we analyze it as veterans advocates is it's basically going to make it easier for the VA to deny claims. Specifically what I'm talking about, under the current law, after the initial decision, and we're talking about the cases of concern are the ones where it's been denied or they've lowballed the disability rating. Under the current system, even after that, the VA has a legal duty to assist, which means to tell the veterans what they need. Okay, that's the way it should be. There shouldn't be lawyers involved. I can say that even though we are both lawyers doing this.
You've been saying that for 5 years.
Yeah, the system should not be an adversarial one. But what I'm saying is with the passage of this legislation, which was primarily driven by the VA itself, by the bureaucrats, if you will, it did have the support of a number of major veteran groups. But I think the problem is they're basically in bed with the VA. They get, you know, through financial support and kind of the Washington, D.C. mindset. There have been some groups like the Vietnam Veterans of America organization which strongly opposed this legislation for the reasons, the same concerns I have, that it's going to make it easier for the VA, and it really doesn't address what the VA calls legacy appeals. Legacy appeals, what does that mean?
Yeah. Yeah,
it means cases that are already in the system on appeals, which is in the neighborhood of between 450,000 and 500,000 cases. The point being, this new legislation will actually start going into effect in February of 2019, about a year and a half ago. Just this past week, they issued a press release, the VA did, saying they're starting to implement the program. They have 18 months under the statute to start implementing it, which means that new cases that are coming in, if they deny, they're going to give the veterans the opportunity to go under the new system rather than the old one. My criticism is not only does it take away the duty to assist, make it more adversarial, but it really doesn't address it. It doesn't speed up any of the nearly half a million cases on appeal. So as Rick was saying, you can be waiting 3, 4, 5 years at each of multiple stages of appeal.
If you were to suggest to the VA how they could speed things up, what would you say,
Let
Dave?
Me take that.
Go ahead. Rick?
One of the things that, and this goes into my practice when before I did veterans law, when I was up in New Jersey, and we did a lot of mediation, and I was president of the Bar Association, and I implemented mediation programs, settlement programs, that were not part of the court procedure. They weren't written into the rules yet. Today in New Jersey, they're written into the rules. I've asked these decision review officers, let's do the same thing. There's one or two out of a group of 30 down in St. Pete that when they see my name, they pick up the phone, they call me. And in the past 2 weeks, we've resolved 3 cases without a hearing.
So just through mediation.
Well in advance, communication. Communicate with your adversary. Pick up the phone, communicate. Because we're all looking at the same thing. We're all looking at the same medical records. Mm-hmm. We're all looking at the same veteran. It's just a matter of communicating with the person who's going to make those decisions and enlightening them, educating them. That's a big part of it, is to educate these people who are making those decisions.
If it were to change over to mediation for everybody, would there be an appeal process? That is, that if you didn't like the results of the mediation, could you appeal, or would it end at the results of the mediation?
So what would happen? I'll give you a case I just did. We agreed on certain disabilities. The veteran's going to be 100% rated, which will get them right up to their max amount. There's a retroactive payment involved as well. But there are about 4 or 5 other claims that we could not decide upon. And they go into what we call a statement of the case. Now, it's not going to change the veteran's compensation, but from a medical point of view, it may be important to still pursue those claims.
So he could appeal that.
So then we appeal that.
I see.
So now the veteran's got the money,
yeah,
and the veteran's financially assisted, which is that's our goal always, is trying to assist these veterans financially. So now they have that. And waiting around for these other claims to finally get resolved doesn't become such a big deal.
Well, if you're a veteran and you've got a legal question for our guests, David Corey and Rick Hurley, call us up, 813-239-9663. And you can send in your email question to us at dj@wmnf.org. David, I want to ask you about burn pits, because a few weeks ago I did an interview with a director that you hooked me up with. There was, for a time, I don't know if it, I guess it's not still going on in Iraq and Afghanistan, but a way to get rid of garbage and hazardous chemicals and all sorts of stuff. There were burn pits that the U.S. military did in both Iraq and Afghanistan, and these are very dangerous things. When the soldiers breathed in the air near the burn pit, they were exposed to all sorts of toxic chemicals.
Yes, and it's a problem that continued for many, many years, even though it was clear the Central Command here based in Tampa, and certainly the troops and chain of command over in those two countries were aware of the problem. The documentary was made by Greg Lovett, and it's called Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, How America Poisoned Its Soldiers. And it's based on a book called The Burn Pits, The Poisoning of American Soldiers by Joseph Hickman, who is an investigative journalist. And Rick Hurley and I both recently saw the film. It's about 52 minutes. It really is a tension getter. It was produced by Greg Lovett and his company, Morningstar Media. Because of the nature of it being a documentary, it was being screened at theaters around the country on a crowdfunded basis, as he explained on the show. And hopefully soon it will be available maybe on YouTube. But what Greg Lovett sent me a note that for Veterans Day, they're releasing it for digital streaming for Veterans Day through the website Vimeo.com, Vimeo.com. And they've got a discounted price there for Veterans Days. But it's also being shown around the country. You can find out the places on the website tug.com, T-U-G-G.com, and also Burn Pits documentary on Facebook. But more about the film, these burn pits, some of them, the largest were 10 acres. And these things would burn 24 hours a day. They would burn everything imaginable, chemicals, batteries, paints, wood, metal, even body, human waste, body parts. Now, this certainly isn't the first war where they would burn stuff, okay? But it was certainly the first war when these major installations are like cities. They've got everything there. They've got swimming pools. They've got Burger Kings. They've got all this. They had money for these high temperature incinerators, which would burn them much more safely. Okay, they didn't spend it. So one of the big, you know, the culprits here are the government itself, but also the contractor KBR, which had the contract for running these things, and there was money for these incinerators, but they weren't used. And meanwhile, if you see the film, as Rick can back me up, is it on? And some of these were like home videos by these soldiers driving through some of the big LSA Anaconda big installations, and it's like a fog. It's down ground level and blocking out the sun.
Is there an automatic presumption that if you breathed in some of this smoke from these burn pits that you've been injured?
That's exactly the problem, that there isn't such a presumption. There isn't
That doesn't have the Agent Orange presumption. And yet, if you talk to anybody, they'll tell you, the burn pits is this generation's Agent Orange.
What happens to people who've been exposed? Give us an example of somebody that you know, or maybe somebody from the film that you saw who was exposed to the burn pit.
Would be rather rare respiratory lung, chronic bronchiolitis, and restrictive bronchiolitis. And I'll give you an example, and this is shown on the film. They found, by 2004, after the first year after Iraq war started, these troops were coming home. These are young people in their 20s. And this one doctor, civilian doctor at Vanderbilt University, that he was noticing now his waiting room was filled with these young troops that were failing their running tests. Okay, they were having breathing problems. They ran standard tests, x-rays, and other tests, and it appeared normal. So they started saying, was it psychosomatic? Well, it wasn't until they did lung biopsies that they realized that there was toxic caused damage to these soldiers' lungs. But it's not just the lungs. It's various kinds of cancers. In the book, Burn Pits, the author even mentions the case of Vice President Biden's son, who died of a brain tumor that he developed not long after coming back from Iraq. And I'm not saying, I'm not a doctor, I'm not diagnosing his case.
I saw one soldier, a man who was in his late 20s or early 30s in the film about burn pits, and he was a human skeleton. Mm-hmm. He was just wasting away, and he was as thin as any human being I've ever seen.
Right, well, he had cancer of the breathing tubes. But various other kinds of cancers. One of the other soldiers developed a cancer in his sinus. He said that as soon as they got over there, these guys were developing symptoms. They would use sinus sprays or other things to treat the symptoms.
Any estimate as to what percent of the soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan breathed in the smoke from the burn pits?
Well, it obviously was, there was literally hundreds of burn pits, but it appears that the ones that were most severely injured were from about five installations, but not exclusively those five. But the number that have registered for the VA's burn pit registry is about 100,000 right now. But I think that's a lowball number.
No, if anyone ever gets a chance to see this documentary, or you want to get it online, I recommend it, because when I first started having clients come in over the last 5 years and they were telling me about the burn pits, I admit I was not familiar with the burn pits. And they were describing it to me, and the black smoke. And I remember one veteran telling me that it would be a beautiful sunny day, but because of the burn pits, it was black. You couldn't see the sun. You couldn't see anything. Yeah. And it would be for acres and acres, and you were just driving through this thing. And then when I saw the video, the documentary, it really hit home. And so I urge anyone who wants to get that documentary, please do, because it's tough.
We're talking with two lawyers who are experts in helping veterans get their benefits. David Corey is here. Rick Hurley is here. Also, I think you guys, you help people if they have bad papers. I want to ask you about that, too. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Chris in St. Petersburg. Chris, what's your question for Rick and David?
Wanted to make you all aware that there's a Facebook group that I think you might be interested in with over 25,000 members, called VA is Lying, where there is a lot of corruption exposed in videos. There's another one with less than 100 members entitled...
Chris, instead of telling us about VA is Lying, and I'm sure people should look at that, do you have a question for our guests?
Well, I just wanted to let them know because they might be able to get some business, get some resources and knowledge.
Okay. Well, all right. Chris, thanks a lot. 813-239-9663. I don't think they're looking for business. Let's go to Elizabeth in Riverview. Hi, Elizabeth. What's your question for Rick and David?
Well, as I explained to your phone operator, I don't have a question. I just want to make certain that the information that there is a Hillsborough County Veterans Administration, Veterans Benefit Office. It's located in Brandon. I want to make certain that the veterans know that. They do excellent work. I'm the widow of a veteran, and I started dealing with this group of retired service personnel who are doing it. They are county employees, but they are retired veterans themselves, and they helped me. I was in Volusia County at the time, and yes, it took a year, but I got benefits. They are persistent. They just keep after the VA, and I don't know what their magic is.
All right. Elizabeth, thanks a lot. Thanks for that. You guys, one of you lives in Brandon, right?
I live in Brandon. Yeah. And the office she's mentioning is a county office. It's on Paul's Drive, right near the post office. And, yes, they do good work. They're veteran service officers. They're veteran service officers for many veteran groups. But they're also at the county level, even at the state level. So that's another layer of...
But my guess is that it's not so much, Elizabeth was able to get some help going through that county office, but my guess is that what you two specialize is in the more difficult cases.
Right,
is that right?
Right.
Can't get help from the first step or third step or fourth step, then they turn to people like you.
Exactly. It's like your taxes. You don't need a CPA to do your taxes, most people, but you might do it yourself or you might go to H&R Block. But some people, because of the complexity, might need to hire a CPA. And it's kind of the same analogy in the VA world.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm
still hoping that some veteran. Elizabeth, thank you so much for your call.
Let me leave the phone number. It, of course, is 813-635-8316 for the office there in Brandon. Thank you for the time.
All right, Elizabeth, thanks a lot. Let's go to Sean in Tampa. Hi, Sean, you're on. What's your question for David Corey and Rick Hurley?
How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I just want to first say thank you for all the work that you do for the veterans. I'm a veteran myself. I got 16 years in. I don't really have a question, but not only have I been a patient at the James A. Haley VA since 2003, I worked there for quite some time as well. And one of the issues that I found was there's a huge distance between the civilian medical professionals there and the veteran professionals there. It's almost like they don't like us. And I'm not trying to bias, but they almost have an issue with the benefits that we are able to obtain, and they think that a lot of us come in there just for those benefits, and our medical care actually suffers for that. So instead of actually going there and receiving medical care, we have to prove to them that there's something wrong with us. We're not validated, and that causes a lot of issues. I've dealt with a lot of veterans in the past that they're overly frustrated because not only do they have to prove that there's something wrong with them, it's almost re-traumatizing.
And Sean, the point you're making is that perhaps we need more veterans who work at James Haley. Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, not only that, but I'm just trying to explain the bias that some of the civilian medical providers have there. And yeah. Really, when a veteran comes in and he's complaining about PTSD or a mental health condition, he's not treated as in he has a mental health condition or something that he needs help with. He has to prove that he has that condition because there's a view that people are coming in here just to obtain the benefits.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. Well, Rick and David, I'm sure you've heard that before, right?
Yeah. Sean, thank you for your call. And you summarized it pretty well. And thank you for your service. What happens when a lot of veterans go into the system is a wall goes up. And instead of greeting them at the door, I know this sounds basic, but greeting them at the door and saying, thank you for your service, how can we help you? they're greeted at, well, what's wrong with you? It's negative, negative, negative. And the veteran reacts to that, and they walk away.
Yes, they do.
And, you know, it's very frustrating for these men and women who have severe physical and mental issues. And, you know, the veteran was trained with the military mind. The VA is an extension of the military. So when the VA says, no, there's no help for you, you're not disabled, we're not going to help you out, they turn and go the other way. And hopefully they meet somebody who says, no, you got to go back. And I see that quite often. I see veterans who a family member will say, be persistent with the veteran, say, look, you need to go back.
Sean, have you seen people walk away from James Haley?
Oh, time and time again. I'm a certified peer specialist for the state of Florida. When I was at the VA, I was a recovery coach, and I worked with veterans that had PTSD, substance issues, things of that nature. And they would get so frustrated that they weren't being validated because they weren't being understood or their condition was being downplayed, that they would leave or disappear, and they would lose that care. Because the civilian population on the outside, they don't know how to treat military. They don't know how to treat veterans with combat experience and PTSD and things of that nature.
You know, with the PTSD, when a veteran goes in for the initial interview, I got to remember, these veterans have been fighting in Iraq, Afghanistan, Vietnam, horrors of war, and they get in for these interviews, and the first few questions are, well, what was your relationship like with your mom and dad? How was your upbringing? How was high school? And the veterans...
Yeah, that's just a very generic...
And the veteran's thing. Looking at the examiner like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
I just came back watching IEDs go off in my face. That's what I'm here for. Not about my mom and dad.
Yeah. Sean, what advice would you give if somebody's up there at James Haley and is listening right now? What advice would you give?
You know what? I would say to learn military culture, because I mean I spent quite some time working at the VA, and people don't know the culture. They don't understand that there's an indoctrination process that happens when you join the military, and it's very hard when you leave the military to transition back. And if you have trauma, especially PTSD or something like that, it's honestly almost impossible unless you have somebody that you can identify with. And, you know, I hate to say it because I have friends that are psychologists that are civilians, but they don't understand the emotions that are involved with going, not only just being active duty military, but going through combat. They don't understand it. And they really need to put more emphasis on veteran-to-veteran care.
All right. Well, Sean, thank you very much. Thanks for adding to
you
the
know,
show.
I do have one other thing to say real quick, if I got a second.
Yeah.
There is a culture at the VA, and I have personally experienced this. There is a very negative culture with a number of psychologists and psychiatrists and other medical professionals that, believe it or not, they actually date their patients.
They what?
They date their patients.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, this has come out, and it you know, you just got to be careful. There are people out there that will prey upon individuals that are at their most vulnerable and take advantage of them.
Mm. Sean, thanks a lot. Thanks for your phone call.
You have a good day.
All right, you too. I should say that my college roommate works at James Haley, one of my college roommates, and he did not serve in the military, but his dad was a Korean War veteran. So, and I'm sure he's got the kind of sensitivity because I know him pretty well. So, okay.
There's a word here called affirmation. So many veterans, even when we give them a nice retroactive check and it helps them with their finances, I look at them and I say, it's not about the check, is it? It's about the affirmation. And they start crying. I mean, these are 65, 70, 75-year-old men and women crying, saying, yeah, I just want my government to affirm and recognize that I served my country. And I was injured. You know, tomorrow's Veterans Day, and I'm going to give a little tip. If you see veterans out there and they're having breakfast, lunch, or dinner, just go up and grab the check, say thank you for your service. I'm telling you, that means more to them than you can ever imagine, more than Wounded Warrior Project or any of these other big organizations that try to help them out. That little affirmation goes a long way for these veterans. And tomorrow's Veterans Day, so there's a little tip for as civilians.
Well, we're offering some advice for veterans today who are trying to get maybe help with the VA. Maybe they've got a problem with the VA. Maybe you've got a problem with your military records. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. And our guests are David Corey and Rick Hurley. Both are attorneys who specialize in veterans' issues. And George is in Lakeland. Hi, George, you're on. What's your question for David and Rick?
Yes, that $5 trillion figure, do they know what percentage of our federal taxes go to pay for that?
As opposed to how much is just added to the $20 trillion we already owe? Not exactly, but you can look at it this way. That's $4.8 trillion that, unlike in previous wars where they would pay as you go, this was all. These were put on the national credit card.
This is all borrowed money. This we don't have war bonds anymore.
Exactly, no. Okay, exactly. So, actually, if I could add to that, because there's another larger statistic, which is, again, this is coming from the Costs of War Project. This is not just David Corey speaking. The Costs of War Project has estimated that when you factor in things like interest payments, future payments, that the total cost from these wars will be $7.9 trillion by 2053. Keep in mind, and we represent a lot of Vietnam veterans, 50 years after, you know, the height of the Vietnam War, there's still, you know, thousands of veterans that are being treated, post-traumatic stress, Agent Orange-related things, a lot of things that they didn't anticipate back in 1964 to 73. Same we predict will happen with these wars.
Oh, wow. So one more question, trivia question. Who said that makes me smart when confronted with that they don't pay taxes?
Donald Trump.
There you go. So our very own, beautiful, wonderful, lovely, tax-dodging president said that makes me smart for not paying, for not supporting the troops.
All right, George. George, thanks a lot.
Summed it all up. That's why the VA is hurting for money. There it is. That's our attitude.
George, thanks a lot. Great to hear from you. 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. What's the most common problem that people come to you for to say, Rick, David, this is just not working out. I've gone through all the normal channels and I'm having trouble with this. What's common?
They tend to be situations where the VA is either denied service connection and we're fighting on appeal for them, service connection. It might even be for
service connection disability.
Disability, right. Disability compensation, where the VA has said either you don't have post-traumatic stress, maybe you had childhood trauma or something else, or that they've lowballed the rating, which the VA, we think, is rather notorious for that. Maybe they're trying to save money. Who knows what the reason is? I've had some clients that have said they literally go into these compensation and pension medical exams and have faced hostile questions from the examiner. So,
is there pressure from the VA on the lower staff to deny claims?
I mean,
go ahead, Rick.
I recently had a case, a hearing, and whenever I'm with my hearing officers, I try to get the communication going, get the discussion. How can we settle this thing? And I'll say to them, you know, this is pretty easy. It's a pretty easy case. You and I can get this thing done. And she said to me, well, I have to be careful. I said, why do you have to be careful? Well, I have someone supervising me, and whatever decision I make, it's going to be reviewed. Therefore, they prefer, on many cases, to punt and send it to the BVA, the Board of Veteran Appeals, up in D.C., which means another...
Punt means deny.
Deny, which is another 2 to 3 years for the veteran to wait. And I make that decision review officer look right at my veteran and say, tell him that, tell her that. Suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder as a result of military sexual trauma. Tell that veteran that you can't make the decision and you're sending it to the BVA.
How common is military sexual trauma?
Too common.
We have a lot of clients that have suffered that and filing claims for psychological injury because of that. It's quite pervasive. There's a lot of, I mean, there's statistics out there that I can't quote off the top of my head, but support.
Well, I can tell you that all my women clients, veterans, were militarily sexually traumatized.
100%.
100% of mine.
Let's go back to the phones. 813-239-9663. Jennifer is in Spring Hill. Hi, Jennifer. What's your question?
Hi. Well, I just wanted to make a comment. I feel that, you know, the Green Party supports the military for defense and veterans, and my concern is how, when it gets cut, that they seem to cut the benefits. My son-in-law is a lieutenant commander of the Coast Guard, and they want to renegotiate contracts and lower the benefits, and, you know, that's one of the things I hope people differentiate between, because the money spent ends up going for more weapons and more that maybe sit and rust or we sell or whatever. But, you know, my concern is how do we make that happen to where, you know, the veterans actually do get, you know, what they were promised
for their service? The VA budget is different than the Pentagon budget, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And we always hear, you know, people like President Trump say, well, we need more money for the military to support our troops. But that's true. But also you get the sense that it helps with veterans. But more money for the Pentagon doesn't help the veterans.
Right. But I will say that since 2001, the number of VA employees has increased dramatically. It's like in the ballpark about 350,000 now. And the budget has dramatically increased since 2001. So they've been spending a lot more money. The question is whether they're because they need to. But it wasn't planned well. They made the choice to go to war in 2003 in Iraq, and obviously 2001 in Afghanistan after 9/11. But there was a lot of skepticism about whether they were planning for what would follow. And the VA now is still. They say that there are 40,000 people understaffed. They have 40,000 vacancies. Most of those are on the healthcare side as opposed to the benefit side. And they have a big shortage of mental health professionals, which is why, and we see anecdotally clients that have trouble getting appointments for mental health care. The one that committed suicide, he wasn't able to get frequent enough access. And there's also too much of a pill-pushing mentality. You know, here are your pills, come back in 3 months or 6 months. Opioid addiction is
a big problem.
Oh, so Jennifer, I hear you saying that you want more money for the veterans side of things, but you're skeptical about spending money on the Pentagon.
Well, yes, and also the fact that we do, you know, we keep creating more victims. We keep creating more people that need these services with PTSD and with the increased. I mean, people aren't questioning the fact that we're in all these different wars when we could be doing things like taking care of our coasts. I mean, other countries use their military to clean up their cities, clean up their coastlines, you know, and do other benefits for their country. That, you know, we're the country that just goes out and gets involved and puts our boots on the ground where, you know, we shouldn't necessarily be, you know. And so that's, you know, the concern that I have is how we allocate that money. And I just would like to be a voice out there, you know, thanks to your radio program, that to say, you know, let's rethink this. Let's talk to our Congress members and, you know, hold their feet to the fire about where is this money really being allocated when you do this budget? And let's put it where it really should be and honor our veterans and, you know.
Yeah, I think we're all surprised when an American soldier is killed in Chad. We're surprised that the U.S. military is active in Chad. Mm-hmm. We had no idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jennifer, thanks a lot.
Absolutely.
All right.
Have a good one.
813-239-9663 is our phone number. We're talking with David Corey and Rick Hurley, who are experts in helping veterans get their benefits. Let's go to Mary, who's in Tampa. Hi, Mary. You're on. What's your question?
Hi, Rob. Yes, I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and I've referred several clients to Rick Hurley because I knew him as a friend, and he has helped them immensely. One man in particular was very depressed because he was denied his benefits and he was about to be evicted from his home. And, you know, the idea of homelessness would make anyone depressed. Rick went above and beyond the call of duty to help him get his benefits reinstated. And he really went above and beyond to help that man. And the man was able to get reemployed and he got his benefits. And he's doing so much better now. So I just wanted to put that out there. Thank you, Rick.
All right. Mary, thanks a lot. Thanks for calling in. Rick, thanks you too.
All right.
Mary, thank you so much. Well, that's a happy ending. 813-239-9663 is our phone number here at WMNF. And let's take another phone call. Thanks to Frank Knox and Patty Perkey. They're answering the phones for us. Smitty's in Tampa. Hey, Smitty, you're on. What's your question?
Good morning. I'm a paralyzed vet in a manual wheelchair. I have two issues, kind of separate. The first one is that the VA, when I bring in my broken wheelchair, they always, well, the way the system is set up, they ask me to find a repair shop in the community to take it to. And then I take it to them, and then what happens is kinesiology has to write up a form for my doctor to write the consult that allows prosthetics to order the part after the repair shop has given them a quote. And this takes weeks and weeks. And I'm just saying, could you tell me who would be able to change where I just drop my broken wheelchair off, they fix it, and then they bring it back repaired? I'm really frustrated about that. And then my second item of contention is I'm not appreciated as a veteran with Heartline, the bus service. I spoke with Catherine when she was on the radio station, not here, a few weeks ago or last week. Anyways, I told her they don't honor my ID card that says service-connected disability. They don't accept that. They said, yes, they do. I said, well, a lot of the bus drivers still will not recognize it, and so I don't get the discount. But the solution also with Heartline, also with like their Heartline Plus, it's an added service where they have a van come not to your house. They want me to go down there, and I've already done it 2 years in a row, and they want me to qualify my status to make sure I'm paralyzed. Well, I've come to the contention of the realization they just are wasting my time by being redundant with all the stuff that I had to put up with the government to give me the card. So I got the card, and then they want me to redo it. So I feel like a monkey being asked to come on down. Let's see how paralyzed you are. But I'll stop and let you guys.
Well, I'll bet you're not the only one with those problems. So, Smitty, thanks a lot. We'll try to get both of them answered. And thanks, Smitty. All right. So the first one is he goes through a bureaucracy to get his wheelchair fixed. That sounds unreasonable to me.
Well, it does, but it's not that uncommon. Here, let me throw something out there for our listeners that may help. You know, President Trump had said whenever he was campaigning, he would have this VA hotline at the White House. If I can give that number out, I'd encourage people to use it because the squeaky wheel gets the grease. Here's the number. You want to grab your pen and paper. It's 855-948-2311. Again, that's 855-948-2311. That's the VA hotline. That's the White House's hotline for VA complaints. I've given that number to a number of veterans. And you'll get some response back. But I encourage you, if you're running in the bureaucracy, this is a way to elevate it to, you know, to the D.C. level and let them know that even though they've made some changes, Dr. David Shulkin's new VA secretary, he has been proactive compared to some of his predecessors, but they need to know what's going on. That's
so, and any other ideas about not having to go through all these steps to get your wheelchair fixed besides calling the 800 or the 855 number?
Well, you also contact the local patient advocates at your facility. And I don't recall if you said what medical facility you're going to. The VA has a number of hospitals.
I think he's in Tampa somewhere.
Okay, Tampa. Yeah. James Haley or the one over in St. Petersburg. But contact the patient advocate's office. You know, by the definition of their job title, they're supposed to be an advocate for the veterans and cut through the red tape. You can do that too. I've had mixed feedback from some of my clients about the patient advocates, but I'd say give it a try. It is at the local level, and see what they can do to kind of cut through the red tape.
And he has to keep going back to Heartline. He has to make the trip, which is difficult for him, to sign up for the veterans benefits for riding Heartline.
One thing I like to, just by comparison, because I was talking a couple months ago to a gentleman with the veterans group in Kansas City, Missouri, and they're working proactively with the city government there, and they've got a program now where veterans in Kansas City can ride their bus for free. They get free passes. I don't know if that's an idea that could easily be adopted here, but it's something to think about.
Anything else you want to address in Smitty's call? Okay, all right. We're talking about how to at least provide some help for veterans who have issues with the VA, maybe with your discharge papers. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Rob, Smitty, thanks a lot.
Rob, if I may.
All right.
Thanks, well, Smitty. All right.
I have a couple of phone numbers. For those of you who are listening or veterans, if you are a family member of a veteran who has left the service and you're having a tough time transitioning to civilian life, there's a program called Coaching Into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Of course, returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching Into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call. The toll-free number is 1-888-823-7458. It operates Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, it's Coaching Into Care. The number is 1-888-823-7458. There's also the Veterans Crisis Line to help, and that number is 1-800-273-8255. Press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they didn't get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, that number is 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Thanks, Rob.
All right. Let's go to Steve, who's in Land O'Lakes. Hi, Steve. You're on with our guests. What would you like to ask?
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Great.
Good. Listen, I'm a veteran. In fact, 45 years ago, I was in basic training today. And I got in late. I checked out the program late. And I don't know if I heard you talking about the MST for the females, but I just wanted you to know that it happens to young boys in the service, too.
Yeah, I represented a young Marine. He was 18. Now he's in his 70s. 18 years old, 1961, boot camp, sexually molested by a training instructor, and he's rated for post-traumatic stress. It really knocked his life off course, so
it
to speak.
Did.
So,
yeah. I'm sure it did. It did for me. And I'm just putting that out there. It took me 43 years to go to the VA to see if I could get some help. And at first, I was really concerned. But I got to tell you, they have helped me out, but they kept me kind of in a limbo because they didn't give me permanent status. And I'm not looking for 100% or anything like that, but I have 70%. And now I've been told that they're going to have to review it like after 5 years. I'm like, wait a minute. I waited all this time. And now I have to be concerned about whether or not you're going to continue with what you're doing. I mean, finally. Anyway.
I'm sorry what you went through.
Unless you're 100% permanent and total, the VA usually brings you back about every 5 years to reevaluate the disability. And they can, at that point, decide that maybe you're better, which is absurd. And at that point, they can make an application to reduce you from 70 down to something less than 70. And we've seen that quite a bit. And we've taken that to our advantage because whenever the VA is trying to take money, believe me, you get a hearing pretty fast. So we go on the aggressive. And what we've ended up doing is getting you from 70 up to 100. But you have to get to that 100% permanent and total, and I would keep fighting it until you get there.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, I thank you guys.
All right.
Glad you're out there helping us out. Thank you.
Steve, thanks a lot. Thanks for the phone call. I'll tell you what, before we're down to the last 2 minutes, can you give out your phone numbers?
Sure.
If people want to find Rick Hurley or David Corey, how can they find you?
My name, Rick is 727-612-1515.
And David Corey is area code 813-662-0760. Again, 813-662-0760.
Why don't you give out our website there, David?
And Corey and Hurley Law Group.com is our website, Corey and Hurley Law Group.com.
Well, we got a bunch more people on the line, but we're down to the last minute. I don't think it'd be fair to try to squeeze in one more question. But Aaron and Dana and Nikki and Mike, we see out there. Rick and David, thanks for coming by WMNF. Great to have you here.
Thanks again, Rob.
Thanks again,
Appreciate
Rob.
Appreciate it.
All right.
See you next year.
See you next year. We'll do another show on this. And thank you for doing what you do. And stay tuned. Daniel Ruth is coming up next on the Midpoint program. If you want to comment about today's show, call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. We'll play those comments back Monday morning at 11 o'clock. Now stay tuned for Daniel Ruth. He's coming up next with the Midpoint program right here on WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota.